I'm just going to go ahead and report out of closed session while everyone is taking their seats. On item number 24A, conference with labor negotiators, the board received a report and gave instructions to negotiating staff. On item number 24B, conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation, the board received a report from legal counsel. And on item 24C, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation, the board received a report and gave instructions to staff.
If I can interrupt, before we continue on with the meeting, as many of you here know today, today is Chair Mathis's last meeting, and so with the help of Chair Pro Tem and Mayor Salas, we're going to have a little recognition ceremony. Harry, why don't you join her?
Thank you very much, and I'd like to ask Chair Mathis to join me up here at the podium. And Chair Mathis, it really is an honor for me to be able to say a few words about you and to present you with this award. But I have been a big fan of Chair Mathis for many, many years. From the time that I got to know him through his work on the San Diego City Council, where he served for two terms. And I always admired the type of public servant that Chair Mathis was. He has such a long and illustrious life, and he's accomplished so much in his time here. There have been so many improvements at MTS under your leadership. For example, establishing new ridership records and reconstructing the trolley system and introducing new ways to reduce our carbon footprint and so much more, like instituting the vintage trolley cars that now are such a landmark in the city of San Diego. But most of all, I've always considered him an officer and a gentleman. From his career in the Navy, he held all kinds of leadership positions there. And he is a gentleman. And I wish that, you know, all generations of men comported themselves like you do. And your wife, Mary, is such a lucky person to have you. And you've been such a good family man on top of everything, being a public servant. Harry Mathis is the type of person that puts community before self, and you have demonstrated that over and over again. You know, I love you. I give him a big hug every time I see him, just because I hold you in such high esteem. And so this is a very humble recognition, and it reads, Harry Mathis, Board Chairman from 2006 to 2017. In grateful recognition of your outstanding leadership, vision, and dedication as chairman of the board, dated December the 14th, 2017. And there's a little just extra bonus besides this wall plaque, and that is a lifetime pass to MTS, buses and trolleys, not only for you, Chair Mathis, but for your beautiful wife, Mary. Here you are.
I'm not going to take a lot of time, just a few words to express my appreciation to this board and the boards that have preceded you in time, and tell you what an honor and a privilege it has been for me and to have this opportunity that you've given me over the years to do something that I love. Public transit, as you know, runs through my veins from my early youth in San Francisco. I greatly appreciate this. It's difficult to leave, but I think probably anyone would probably agree it's time. I'll be celebrating my 85th birthday in January, and I just thank the Lord that I have the health and my brain still works to the point where I can be productive. And it's, I just have to tell you that this has been my association with MTS and this board here and boards that have represented MTS in the past that I've been associated with have just been a great highlight of my life. And I thank you for that. Thank you.
Also want to let people know that we do plan a luncheon for Chair Mathis in January, and the notice is at your desk there, and you're certainly all invited to that. And also we have a copy of the MTS Connections in which Chair Mathis and his history has been featured in that for us this year.
See what I consider myself. I look forward to seeing you on the 25th and January, and I'll have Mary with me, and I look forward to it very much to see you. Okay, back to business. I have been looking at the calendar, and I think I would like, I have some speakers here for 31, so I'd like to go to 31 first. Are we ready for that, or do you need to?
Yeah.
Are we ready for 31? I think I have four speakers on that one, and I think the time being what it is, I want to make sure, five speakers actually in 31, so I want to make sure we get that in. Our time is getting limited. And then we'll go back to 30.
Good morning. My name is Ken Nelson. I'm the Taxi Cab Administration Manager here at MTS. Wanted to give you a brief history as to why we're bringing these Ordinance 11 revisions to your attention today. It's obvious that the taxi industry over the past several years has fallen upon hard times for reasons that are very well known. And even though I've only been the Taxi Cab Administrator for the past couple of months, it quickly became apparent to me that there were several issues that could be addressed and needed to be addressed. And by doing the revisions here to Ordinance 11, we're hoping to fix some of the codification issues that we've seen that might help the industry and bring it a little bit more up to date as we see it. In September, the Taxi Administration Subcommittee tasked the Taxi Administration and their sub-working group to go through the Ordinance 11 and come up with any changes that we could find. And the changes that we currently have are the things that we are recommending. The ones that I will put up on the board here are our major changes. You have before you several minor changes, but we'll go over just the major ones here first. First one being 1.4F, 1.8H3, and 1.8Y, no longer requiring distinct color schemes for taxis. Permit holders may change colors at their discretion. There was a time when it was required that each taxi have a unique paint scheme based on what dispatch service they were using. That no longer seems to be an issue. any longer, and it's actually just an additional cost for these small business owners to do these unique paint schemes. As they bring new cars into the fleets, it would be much easier for them to just be allowed to use whatever factory paint schemes come with the vehicles they're bringing onto the fleet, or if they change from one dispatch service to another, to be able to keep the paint job that they currently have and not incur the additional cost. 1.H(I), 4 and 5 removes the 18-inch distance restriction on items near the medallion number and company information in order to allow for potential internal ad space. 1.8M allows for the potential display of external advertising in accordance with existing board policy number 21. We've seen or have had recommendations from the industry that they would like two options. One, to have a more minimalistic look on their taxis, or to have the opportunity for additional fund resources, income streams, and that would come through placing advertisements on their vehicles. And we are in agreement that giving them that option as small business owners, they can make the decision what works best for their company. 1.80 requires max rate of fare be posted inside the vehicle. I think that's pretty self-explanatory. As you'll see when we talk about AB 1069, they'll no longer be required to post their rates outside of the vehicle as far as the state law changes. 1.12E requires all MTS permitted for-hire vehicles to attend biannual MTS safety training. Currently, it was only taxi drivers that had to attend this training on a biannual basis every other year. We are making it a requirement that anyone that is part of an MTS permitted system, jitney drivers, non-emergency medical transport drivers, all go through the same safety training on a biannual basis. 2.2C3 would remove the requirement to post rates, a fare on the exterior of the taxi. The rate of fare of posting would be met by adherence to 1.80. Again, that is to adhere to AB 1069, where they no longer have to have the rates posted outside the vehicle. 2.2C4 removes the prohibition regarding postings on the rear door to allow the possibility of advertising, again going back to possible revenue streams for these small business owners. 2.2E1 allows the use of any meter that is certified and approved by Weights and Measures. That again goes towards the adherence towards AB 1069. Currently, they have to have a hard meter that is attached to the payment device, but with the passage of AB 1069, they're allowed to go to soft meters, which allows them again to engage in surge pricing should they choose to do so, which means they can either lower their prices or raise their prices, but obviously not any higher than the maximum rate that's been approved. 2.3B allows for the removal of the top sign by removing the requirement that persons outside the cab must know if the vehicle is in service or not. Again, this allows for the minimalist look that some of the taxi owners are looking to go to. The vast majority of their passengers are not coming from the street hails, they're coming from prearranged trips, so this should not be an issue. 2.3C allows for taxis to follow current marking policy or the new minimalist scheme, which would only require company name, medallion number, and MTS logo on the rear quarter panel. Again, as the industry throughout the United States changes and goes to a more minimalist standard at times, this would allow them to have less and less advertising or less and less markings on their car, but still keeps the requirement that they have not only the company name, but their medallion number and the MTS logo in case there is a complaint, someone would be able to easily identify the vehicle. 2.3H no longer requires electronic payment method to be tied to a meter as long as all receipt requirements are met and the passengers can operate the payment machine. If the companies choose to go to payments of like using the square, as long as the customer is able to hold on to the machine, swipe their own card, and the receipt that they're provided has all the information on it, such as the driver's name, the date, the time, the total amount, and the medallion number, that would be fine. 2.4T section is added to ensure passengers are notified of the applicable rate prior to passenger accepting the ride via the walk-up or the street hails. Again, and that is also in AB 1069. And the one major one on here that is not really addressed towards taxis, but non-emergency medicals, redefines NEMs by removing the requirement that the person being transported must be either physically or mentally disabled, and continues to focus on the nature of the trip. The The ordinance currently focuses on the nature of the trip, but it was added in the physically or mentally disabled, and we were seeing companies that were operating outside of the ordinance, using that as a loophole to try and get out of citations, and it was not fair to hold the regulatory inspectors to being able to identify or diagnose somebody who's medically or physically disabled, and not to mention that they would not even have access to their medical records, and they could not make that determination. So this removes that requirement and continues to focus solely on the nature of the trip, as long as it's medical in nature. And that's a list of the major ones, if there are any questions.
Thank you. As you know, Councilmember Lori Zapp has been our representative for the board on the taxi committee, and so I offer her a chance to make the first comment and perhaps make a motion. I do, wait, before we get to that, I'm sorry, excuse me, Lori, we do have five speakers, and we'll give them a chance. And I might add that all five have checked the support box on their speaker slips. And so, yes, and so in the interest of time, because we do have a lot of business, I hope you won't mind if I limit you to 2 minutes. Mr. Anthony Palmieri will be first, followed by Tony Weisel.
Mr. Palmieri had to leave, so he just wanted to voice his support.
Okay, then Mr. Weisel will be next, followed by Peter Zici. Go ahead, sir.
This is on?
Yes.
Good morning, Chairman Mathis and board members. My name is Tony Weisel with USA Cab. Serving our community for 35 years here in San Diego, and I'm here before you on the matter of item 31, trying to convince you, or better yet, to join forces with us and make the decision to change 100 years of regulations here in the taxi industry. Changes before us, so we need your support to survive in the current marketplace that we are facing. As you're aware, the taxi industry needs your support more than ever today. The decisions that are going to be made today have been worked on not since September, but before that. We've been working on leveling the playing field for quite some time with this board and with our regulatory agency and with the city of San Diego and with the airport. So it's vital for our industry that some of these changes are made, because change is at hand and we have to change some of our regulatory requirements. So I'm here in support and hope that I can convince you to support also these ideas that will at least give us a chance. It's not the end, it's the beginning of a start to give us another chance at a bite at the apple, and hopefully we can continue serving the city of San Diego, which has been a very humbling experience, but it's been an experience. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Peter Zici, followed by Adrian Kwiatkowski.
Yes, good morning. My name is Peter Zici. I'm here on behalf of the Employee Rights Center and the United Taxi Workers of San Diego. And while the United Taxi Workers wasn't involved in the WIRM subcommittee, couldn't be there, they wanted to voice their full support for these changes. Ironically, we started trying to put some of these changes, not these particular changes, but changes to the regulatory process in as early as 2011. So it's taken a while and some changes in the industry to get everybody on the same page, but I think we are. And speaking to the fact that this is only the beginning, we agree. And one of the things we want to work with the taxi administration on is some of the penalties, the penalty guidelines that penalize drivers. Some of these are rather onerous for the kind of penalties they are, and especially since they've internalized the training program, we'd like to see more warnings and retraining before you take taxi drivers out of service, denying them the opportunity to make a living, which is harder today than it's ever been. So we look forward. There's a lot of regulations still on the books that we think no longer serve the industry, and we look forward to being involved in the process in the coming months to help identify them. As Mr. Weisel says, these are small business people that are being basically put out of business by some pretty powerful worldwide figures, players. So Thank you for being considering these things today, and we look forward to more of them in 2018. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kwiatkowski, and you'll be followed by Margo Tangway.
Good morning, Chairman Mathis. Adrian Kwiatkowski, President and CEO of the Transportation Alliance Group. I represent most of the ground transportation providers at San Diego International Airport. And I can't believe I just started coming to MTS, Harry, and you're already leaving. So it's good to see you. As is mentioned, this is a good starting point, but there's more to be done. This is not enough. Let me make that very clear. When you compare the PUC regulations for TNCs in California, their regulation pages total 4 pages. Ordinance 11 regulations are 40 pages long. We need to cut more. We need to let industry thrive. A lot of these regulations are antiquated and they need to go. Today is a starting point, but there is more on the horizon. What else do we need to change? We need to change this government-controlled rate-setting system. That is one of the things we're going to talk about in the future. Uber and Lyft can change their rate 4 or 5 times in the next hour. We have to go through almost a month-long process to raise or lower our rates. We are at a competitive disadvantage that's created by the government, and we need to fix that. The insurance requirements. Every physical taxi is required to have a $1 million insurance policy. Uber as a company is allowed to have $1 million per incident. So if you run a fleet of 100 physical taxis, you have to have $100 million of insurance. That is so costly for these small business owners. That's something we need to take care of. We talked about reducing the training. I think new training program is going to be 8 hours. If any of you left a meeting today and went to the Uber website, you'd go through your 5-minute online training program for Uber and probably be driving for Uber by 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon. That's how uneven this playing field is.
Okay, your time is up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We get the point.
So please support these changes, and there's more to come in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that's our 5 speakers. Oh, Margo, yes, yes. Can't forget Margo. Sorry, Margo. I was looking at the wrong.
Good morning. And I'll preface it, if we run out of time, with happy holidays to everybody here. I think the red light's not on. It's working? Okay,
yeah.
And now I can hear it, okay. I have been a taxi driver without pay since high school. I started driving a cab with pay in 1978, and we still had company drivers. The first quick question is, let's have a company pay the drivers. It has been so slow out there, these guys would be fired for low booking, and I saw it happen when we had company. There's a lot of reasons why we went to lease. It was federal law. I waited a few months, and in 78, I started leasing, 79. And my business tax license from the city of San Diego says 1979 on it. It's a clean record. I'm the senior driver at the airport, and I'm obviously one of the senior drivers for the taxi industry. Our business is down. The value of a cab in New York used to be $1.2 million. It is now $140,000. What we're facing here is the same going on with transit. You know me, I've been here the whole time. Transit's in trouble, the cabs are in trouble, and there's some other industries. There's a big article, the airport itself is in jeopardy over what's going on with the worldwide way we're going at it. So let's go to the city of San Diego. If they were employees, they'd be fired. It's been so slow. The average waits are 2 to 3 hours, maybe 4, sometimes 6 hours. I've been known to say 6 hours. And you get a $5 trip. Now, in order to stay in business, we need to have business expenses. And this is where we're in trouble. I am supporting what we've done. And just for the record, so that you have a full thing here, I am the taxi driver lease rep on taxi committee at MTS. This is my sheriff's permit. It's got USA, which is what I'm driving. It also has American Red Top. and I've driven Cypress when that became Best Cab and Leaf. And that's the full agenda. Again, happy holidays. Just for a point of history, Chairman Mathis used to find the lady driver at the airport years back to go find his cab in the parking lot where his lovely wife had left it for him. And the problem was I had owned Volvos. I knew what they looked like, so we could go find his Volvo. That's when he was out at Point Loma as a captain in the submarine base. Thank you very much. Again, happy holidays.
Thank you, Margaret. Okay, a related issue, of course, we're going to go down to 45. I'm getting in a hurry here, and I'm getting ahead of myself.
I know, thank you. I actually have to step out for a few minutes at like 11:17, so hopefully we can have a vote before then. As the chair of the taxi cab committee, and by the way, thanks to the appointment of Council President Cole, I will be serving on the taxi cab committee again this coming year, and which is great because we have more work to do, as you just heard. I am happy to move this item. As the speaker said, this is just a start. I think there's a big misconception out there that the I don't even remember when that vote was. It was about 2-3 years ago. They thought it was a complete deregulation so that, you know, Uber, taxi cabs, everyone was on a level playing field. Far, far, far from it. The regulations all stayed in place. The caps left. They've lost their investments. It's really been a really difficult for our taxi cab drivers. So these are just some initial changes. Mr. Kwiatkowski brought up some others. There's still others, and we need to expeditiously get these changes made so that they can be on a more level playing field, be competitive, and make a living. So I think the staff recommendation is to incorporate all of these changes into, it doesn't say what the staff recommendation exactly is, but to incorporate all of these changes into the taxi, the governing rules for taxi cabs. Is that correct?
Yes, it's an ordinance change, so we will incorporate them into the ordinance, and then going forward, that will be our regulatory authority.
Okay, and I'm looking forward to getting to the board as many changes as we can as quickly as possible, so thank you.
I want to thank you for your service on the taxi cab committee, because I know it's not without its moments. And I'll take a second from someone, from President Cole. And if there's no further. Oh, I'm sorry.
Chair Mathis, I have a comment as well.
Yes. Who was? Okay. We're pointing back and forth. I'll take you to first, Ms. Gomez, and then Lori Bragg first.
Okay. Sorry. Thank you. Councilmember Zapp, I too would like to thank you for your work on the taxi cab committee. It's not an easy committee. And as a child growing up in a family that owned taxi cabs, this item was particularly interesting to me. We ended up closing our cab company because of regulations and insurance issues. But I did want to state that I truly, really do support Section 1.8N. I thought that was critical. And Section 1.12E, but on Section 1.8I, I do think it's important that all the vehicles have the fire extinguisher, the emergency reflectors, and a first aid kit. I realize it's a matter of cost for those drivers, but perhaps voluntarily they would see the need to comply with that. Thank you.
Ms. Gomez.
Thank you, and also thank you for the work on the committee. I had a question about 1.8M. In terms of advertisement, are there any guidance on now that we're all the cities are dealing with the cannabis industry in terms of prohibiting advertisement?
Currently, our advertisement policy prohibits all drugs and alcohol at the moment. It does not describe specifically what types of drugs.
Is there a need for direction for specific?
I don't have any specific direction on terms of marijuana. We haven't looked into that closely.
But is that needed?
What?
Is that needed?
We can. I do know by federal law that it is considered illegal marijuana, and it under another prohibition in our advertising policy that we cannot violate any federal, state, or local law as well. So unless Karen wanted to.
And I'll just, we'll relook at our advertising policy and make sure we don't need any incorporation. We have incorporated that any ads on taxis have to comply with the MTS board adopted advertising policy, so they wouldn't be allowed to have an ad on a taxi that would violate something that MTS wouldn't allow on a bus shelter or a bus. Okay. So there is that protection. I have to go back and look of what it says at marijuana. I know we currently don't allow alcohol, and we don't allow drugs, and we don't allow tobacco. And so we would take the position that that includes marijuana ads, but if we need to bring a revision so that that's clear, we will.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to make sure it doesn't open that gate.
It's also a policy that is, in broad terms, restricted to commercial activity. So public issues, et cetera, can't be advertised on it, and political ads and things like that. But even with that, you have to be a little careful that you don't get things advertised just because somebody's selling something. So.
Okay, any further discussion? If not, we have a motion for to approve. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. We'll now go on to a related subject, item 45. And Samantha Lutzley will give the report.
Good morning, Chair Mathis and board members. The purpose of this presentation is to inform the board of new legislation regulating taxicab transportation services. AB 1069 was adopted by the California governor in October 2017 and predominantly goes into effect January 1st of 2019. And it attempts to modernize the regulation of taxicab service and help it better compete with other for-hire modes like Uber and Lyft. Time is in essence here, so I'll quickly go over that there's no major changes with AB 1069 in terms of fare. Substantially no revisions will be necessary to MTS Ordinance 11. As Ken noted earlier, that so long as taxi meters are approved by the California Department of Division Measurement Standards, they will be allowed in taxi cabs. I know that's a big modernization. So taxi cabs may be using new devices and technology, such as an app on a smartphone in terms of taxi metering. Permit holder requirements, no substantive changes here. AB 1069, as does Ordinance 11, still requires background checks with fingerprinting, pull notice programs, certain safety requirements, and training. The big change with AB 1069, though, is in terms of substantially located. Currently, if a taxi cab company or driver wants to operate in multiple cities in the region, they may have to pay permit fees and business license fees to multiple jurisdictions. With AB 1069, only the cities and or county that has a company or driver substantially located in their jurisdiction can require a permit fee, inspections, or business license fees. So that effectively allows taxicab drivers and companies to pay less fees and to have to only work with a certain number, maybe even just two jurisdictions in the region to operate. In addition, once you're found to be substantially located in a certain jurisdiction, you can then operate and do pre-arranged trips anywhere throughout the region. So again, in effect, this allows companies and drivers to have a bigger geographic range when they're doing their businesses, and to be more consistent with rideshare services like Uber and Lyft. And the second change with AB 1069 is how a jurisdiction can regulate taxicab services. With AB 1069, a city or county can only regulate taxicab drivers if they're substantially located within their jurisdiction and if the city or county has, one, entered into an agreement with a transit agency, or two, entered into or created a joint powers authority with another public entity. Currently, MTS, as a transit agency, is in agreement with multiple cities to regulate taxicab services. This includes San Diego, El Cajon, Imperial Beach, National City, Santee, La Mesa, Poway, and Lemon Grove. These cities right now are the only jurisdictions, unless anything changes before January 1st, 2019, that can regulate taxicab transportation services and that can collect business license fees. So this may change the landscape of regulation. And if you see an attachment B of this agenda item, you'll see how different cities in the county are regulating taxicab services currently. So So next steps to implement AB 1069 is that we'll be working with the cities and the county that are in our service area to see how they intend to comply with AB 1069. Our enabling legislation only allows MTS to enter into agreements with cities and jurisdictions within our service area. So we'll be working with the City of Chula Vista, City of Coronado, and the county to see how they intend to comply and whether or not they'd be interested in working with MTS in the future in terms of regulating taxicab transportation services. And be working with TAC to receive feedback on any necessary revisions to Ordinance 11 to implement AB 1069, which we'd likely come back to the board with end of 2018. Thank you.
I wanted to mention as well that the unincorporated area is going to be a challenge because our jurisdiction cuts across it, as we know from our other discussions about AB 805. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in the future. But our enabling legislation doesn't allow us to go outside of the jurisdiction.
I had a
question. Yes. Mayor Salas.
Yes. So Chula Vista regulates its own taxi. So when you're talking about bringing the City of Chula Vista into compliance with AB 1086, does that mean that then the taxi cab regulation would be strictly under the umbrella of MTS, or does it mean that the taxi cab drivers can opt to either keep their license within Chula Vista, but also have to have another license with MTS?
Just to clarify, we're not necessarily going to tell the cities how they need to comply with AB 1069. What we're going to offer is that we would talk with your city staff to let them know this is coming down the pike, you know, that they have a whole year. I'll let Samantha answer the legal question, though.
So you, as at Chula Vista, you have the option in order to comply to work with the transit agency like MTS or enter into a joint powers authority with a different public entity, let's say Coronado or, you know, whoever. And if there's a company that has a physical address in Chula Vista and you enter into agreement with a transit agency or JPA, you'd still be able to collect a business license fee. And so long as they're doing over 50% of their originating trips in Chula Vista, you'd be able to require a permit fee and require inspections and other regulations at that taxi cab company through Chula Vista, whether it be through a transit agency or a JPA.
But it kind of wouldn't make sense, I mean, economically.
Which part?
For the taxi drivers to have to, do their licensing here in Chula Vista, because they would be required to also get licensing from the JPA or MTS?
Chula Vista, if you enter a JPA, it'd be only working with the JPA. And if you enter to agree with the transit agency, the taxi cab company would only work through MTS. It's almost like it's just a different entity for you, for the city.
So this this legislation had really a checkered past. And since you were in the legislature, you know how some of these things work out. The legislation originally, they were going to have sort of like the county do it for everybody in the county, and then the counties didn't want to do it, so then they went and they tried to get the MPOs to do it, and then the MPOs didn't want to do it, so they kind of settled on this hybrid of you can either work with a transit agency or create your own JPA. And the goal is that they want to minimize how many licenses these cab companies have to get.
Right.
Whereas, you know, in Chula Vista, it's probably a very easy process. The legislature might not know what every city is doing to help out the cab industry.
Great. So, well, I certainly want to make sure that Chula Vista is in compliance, right? So I'll be talking to our people that deal with the taxis. Thank you.
Mr. Sankey.
Yeah, as the other uncheck mark on the list here, Mayor Salas, I share my concern for my city being compliant with state law. My question is a pragmatic one. Currently in our city, cabs can come from San Diego and drop off someone, for example, at the Hotel Del. But once they drop their fare, they're not allowed to pick up a fare from the hotel and go back to San Diego with that fare. Our rules are such that to get a cab in Coronado, you must use the Coronado Cab Company, I think there are two. How does 1069 address that?
So you at the City of Coronado could regulate which companies can stand at your taxi stands or do pickup hails in terms of numbers or which companies. So that's a way that you can still regulate the number of taxi cab companies that are picking up rides in the city of Coronado. But in terms of limiting a certain company, that does, so long as anyone has substantially located in, has been found substantially located in any given city, and they only do some trips out of Coronado, Coronado could not require a business license fee or a permit, but again, City of Coronado can require how many taxi cab companies can sit in a stand area or do pickup hails.
Yeah, this has come up with the industry in the past. I know the cab drivers or owners in El Cajon, for instance, wanted to be able to pick up at the City of San Diego because, you know, you drive all the way out to drop somebody off. You'd like to be able to pick up and then return. What this allows is for them to now schedule trips. So if they're on their way in to the airport, for instance, and they get a call and, hey, would you mind picking somebody up in the City of San Diego? They're allowed to do that now. So AB 1069 prohibits cities from restricting that kind of thing. But again, you can say only Coronado licensed cabs can sit on the curb at our, you know, stand at Del Coronado or something like that.
Right, okay. And does the business entity that's hosting those cabs have any authority in terms of if it's on their private property? Particular cab companies would have relationships with the hotel, for example? If it was on private property or?
AB 1069 didn't talk about
that
in any way.
Okay, I mean, I guess my goal is efficient movement of people, and if 1069 promotes that, and we'd certainly, as a city, want to be in compliance with that, and I'm going to encourage our staff to work a little closely with you to decide what our best move is, and it sounds like joining your collective approach would not be a bad idea for us as a smaller city. Thank you for your work.
Yeah, I do have one speaker on this item. We had two, but Mr. Palmieri left. So, Mr. Wessel, you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Tony Wessel with USA Cab. The only thing I wanted to add to this is this basically doesn't do much for us here in San Diego other than make us more of a regional permit. We're already being licensed in a fashion that was indicated there that's going to be done. So from that standpoint, from our position is this is another working paper for us that we're going to see how to progress in light of what we have to already do in our industry. So that's all I want to mention on this. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, this is an information item. If there's no further comment, we'll move on and go back to item 30, which is the Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program. This is very important because it involves grant applications that we need to make. And
okay, I'll try to make this as briefly as possible. It's a pretty complicated grant application that we're going to be submitting, so I want to make sure that you're understanding it. This is Gordon Meyer. He's going to be actually writing the application, so I get the easy job today. The Transit and Intercity Rail Capital Program is a discretionary grant program. It was created in 2014. Originally, it was only funded through the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, which is funded through cap and trade auctions. But last year they supplemented this funding with SB1, and so now this fund has $2.4 billion projected to be spent in the next 5 years. So what they did was in November they put out a call for projects for a five-year cycle. This is similar to the STIP, which is administered by the California Transportation Commission, where as funding becomes available, they have a slate of projects for the regions that they will then fund. $1.4 billion of this is anticipated from SB1 sources, and then the rest is based on whatever the auctions will bring forward, which is projected for the $1 billion. This program of projects will only fund capital portions of projects, so I want you to keep that in mind as we're discussing what we'll be doing. They really want to fund the transformative capital improvements, so they want to see big projects. They also have to see reductions in greenhouse gases, so we have to calculate what these projects will do. And they'd like you to expand and improve transit services so that we increase ridership on transit. A big push from the city, the state, and especially the governor's office is to really integrate the systems, the state's rail systems. So that's going to get some extra points if that's one of your goals. And then they want to improve transit safety. So there's some risks involved with submitting applications. One is the real threat of SB1 repeal. Again, over half of the funding in this program is from SB1. Also, the award could have a budgetary cost. There's no guarantee that when you ask for the full funding for a specific sub-portion of your projects, that you're going to get full funding. The match is technically not required, but we really need it to be competitive. They don't really fund any of these TIRCP projects unless you have a match. To prove GHG reduction, you really are going to need to show that you're increasing transit service or capacity. And so that comes with an ongoing operational cost, which, again, they're not going to fund through this program. And then as projects are designed and developed, you may end up finding that the budget changes. It's a five-year program of projects. You may not know, because you haven't designed the project yet, exactly how much that's going to cost. So there is that risk. But these are really mitigable risks, so that's why we're offering up these suggestions for our projects. For instance, if SB1 is repealed, the program itself will not go away. They'll still have the greenhouse gas reduction fund proceeds. And at that point, they will have to make the decision, are we going to shrink the program? Are we going to kind of stretch it out over 10 years instead of five to try to fund it, all the projects they get this year? Or will we see legislative change that will actually give more of the cap and trade proceeds to this program of projects? So that's one of the things. Also, if the awards are too small for our project, meaning, you know, they only fund 10% and we don't know where we're going to get the other 90, the board can make the decision not to accept the award. The board can decide how to proceed once the awards are announced, and we can certainly come back to you if we find ourselves in that position that it would have a budgetary impact. And then you can also seek an award through an amendment process that is well established from the CTC itself. So those are the kinds of things that we should keep in mind as we're looking at these projects. So our approach to selecting which projects we would submit this time was to, one, prioritize zero emission buses. The board has a goal of seeking funding for a pilot, but also in the out years, we'd like to start seeking funding for purchasing replacement buses that are of zero emission. We also are proposing projects we know will compete well. There's no sense in putting in projects that you have no chance of winning money for. And then AB 1550 is a piece of legislation that requires that a certain amount of the funding go to areas that are considered disadvantaged communities through the Cal EPA EnviroScreen, as well as in low income or in low income and within 1/2 mile of these disadvantaged communities. So you want to prioritize your funding to try to be more competitive in that manner. You also want to seek funding for projects we know we have to do anyway. So we know, for instance, we have to do certain rail projects because of, you know, preventative maintenance or enhancements that we have to do. One of the things that we definitely have to do is connect up the blue line from America Plaza to Old Town Transit Center, because Midcoast, when it comes in, it stops at Old Town Transit Center. So there's certain projects within that corridor that need to be done in order to allow us to run both the green line and the blue line in that corridor. And I'll go through a few of those as examples. And then we have unfunded CIP, which we can't supplant CIP that is already being paid for by either our Transportation Development Act funding or anything like that. So we're only targeting projects that are unfunded in our CIP. We are also prioritizing things that were identified in our transit optimization plan, which was approved by the board in September. the TIRCP won't fund operations, so new bus service would be considered our match for the capital portions of those projects. And we would think that the operational funding could be paid for by future formula funds that the agency would meet, would be getting under SB1. And then finally, we really want to propose increased service that we were intending to do anyway. Again, I mentioned this connection of the blue line between America Plaza and Old Town Transit Center. Transnet only will fund the operations right now from Old Town up through UCSD. It will not fund this portion between America Plaza and Old Town. So we have to get, as a region, we have to fund that anyway, so we might as well submit projects that include that because we can get the benefits of the GHG reductions. So project number one, zero emission bus pilot project. So this would get us 8 pilot buses plus 30 zero emission buses that also the related fueling and electrification infrastructure. The cost for this is $43 million, and we're anticipating about matching that with about 31%, and that could be from a number of sources. Project two is a much bigger project. This is the Blue Line Rail Corridor Transit Improvement Project, or Transit Enhancement Project. This has three different components. The first of these is the increased light rail service I mentioned from America Plaza to Old Town. And there's a lot of capital involved, two double crossovers, some improvements at America Plaza to connect America Plaza and Santa Fe Depot better than it is today, and then some improvements that we're already planning to make but are not completely funded for the Old Town Transit Center. This would also include the 15-minute Blue Line service in this corridor, which would essentially double the service to a 7.5-minute service in that corridor. Second portion of this is the state of good repair performance improvements. This is all capital, you know, mundane stuff like track and slope repair and things like that. Important to us, you know, as an agency, but they might not rank as high for if they were standalone projects, but we're hoping the whole program of projects will be attractive for this award. And then finally, the third thing, this is two new bus rapid transit feeder bus services. When the TIRCP was originally created, they didn't allow feeder bus service, but they've since added that in as an eligible source for, or a project for the application. And so what we've identified are two BRTs that we felt in the TOP would be good additions to our transit network. The first of these is in the city of Chula Vista. It starts at H Street Trolley, and it runs through to Southwestern College and then out to the Millennia development. This has, you know, it's not going to be a lot of bells and whistles on the capital side, but it will be, you know, branded BRT. It'll have the, you know, like the amenities of BRT. We're going to work with the city of Chula Vista. They have a signal transit traffic signal prioritization program that they're working on. So we'd really like to really enhance this service. But ultimately, it's because Southwestern College has become such an important institution for all of San Diego County, and we would really like to, you know, build on that through this BRT. There is a service enhancement involved, and we would want to see that paid for through SB1 formula funds we'd expect to receive once this is in place. And then the second rapid runs from Imperial Beach through the Iris Transit Center and then out to Otay Mesa Transit Center. And this actually kind of mimics a couple of our different routes currently, but it'll really enhance the service and add quite a bit to the network. The capital improvements, again, are similar to what we would see on the Rapid in Chula Vista, as well as the service improvements. So here's a map that's very difficult to read on the screen, but it just basically shows the program of projects for the second application. And I can show you this. You have a copy of this at your desk. It's on the attached to the revised agenda item. And it really shows you kind of the layout of what we'll be asking for. That's on the left. And then on the right, you'll see the match that we'll be expecting and the sources of that match going forward. And the ongoing operational costs for the BRTs, for instance, if SB1 is repealed, then we'll just assume that we're not going to be getting money from this program and we're not going to be getting the operational dollars from the to fund the BRT either. So I just wanted to highlight that to you. So next steps, we're going to continue to refine the project budgets as we move forward to the January 12th submittal deadline. This is a really complex application, and we've already been working on it for months now to try to really refine this, but we will we'll get it a little bit tightened up. We also need to coordinate this with our 2019 CIP for board consideration, which I believe comes in February or March. And then the completion of the applications in time for the submittal. So what we're asking is that the Board of Directors authorize us to submit these two projects for the application, to submit the Blue Line Rail Corridor Transit Improvement Project as well as the Zero Emission Bus Pilot Project. And so I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, just a question. You said you're going to continue, you're continuing work on this, or are you asking for approval of this as the blueprint that you're going to use?
These would be the projects. I mean, the budgets for each component of them may shift a little bit, but it would not be substantive. I mean, we're every day just trying to refine the numbers a little bit better.
We're
more looking at the strategy
in the form that you see.
Exactly.
For those issues. Yeah, Mr. Sankey.
Thank you, Chair Mathis. I'd like to first move the motion forward and just ask for clarification. Are these submitted as two different grants, or is this one pile of money that we'd have to do these two projects with?
It would be two separate applications.
So one could win and one could not?
Correct.
Basically, okay.
And one could only get funded in part.
Okay.
And so they've actually asked us to chunk out each application so that if they only have enough money to fund $2 million for the pilot, ZEB pilot, that's what they're going to want us to tell them, is what could we take out as a smaller portion of each of those projects.
Okay. My motion to approve the staff recommendation continues.
There's a second from Mayor Salas. Any further discussion? I'm sorry, President Cole.
You know, I, too, am really excited about the zero-emission buses. As our Mayor Salas is, because she talked about this months ago, and then we had an opportunity to go and see the buses, and it's really exciting. And again, we're looking at 8 zero-emission buses starting in 2021, is that my understanding? And then...
It could be before then. I mean, we're, you know, right now where we are in the process, we're about to go out to... out to the market to hire the consultant that we talked about. That's going on. We're also exploring options for procurement of buses, whether we have to do a full competitive procurement on our own, or we may be able to piggyback, which means go to somebody else's contract that has options and get the ability to buy from that. That could expedite things. So we're looking, we're kind of doing things along the same track.
Well, again,
so it could be earlier. It could be, I'd say there's a possibility it'd be mid 2019. I think that's what our schedule is right now.
Absolutely excited about this one. So, and absolutely excited about if you want a trial area, you know, where you the district that you can come into. So, but thank you for this this one, and looking forward to having these buses implemented in our city. Thank you.
Yeah, motion and second. Any further comments? Oh, yes, Ms. Rios.
I just have a quick question. So when you spoke about the two projects and Project 2 being the Blue Line, there was those three separate projects. And is that when you what you meant when you said chunk them out, that if the money wasn't there, you would go to some of those separately?
Yes. So, and even finer detail probably, and you can talk about the strategy on that.
Yeah, so they can choose how to chunk out the project at their discretion. That's how, what they did with our last award in 2015. Like, they funded 8 of the 9 LRVs, and then they did not fund operations. But they, one of the questions that they specifically asked for is, how would you like to see it scaled if we had to reduce a potential award? So that's what we do. It might not be in this exact fashion, but we'll break it out in a way that makes sense.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anything else? If not, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion, please say aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to... I'm going back to... Yes, that's where I'm going. Okay, I'd like to ask Mayor Salas to give us a report from the nominating committee.
Okay, thank you very much. The nomination committee met on Friday, December the 8th, and we had a really good meeting and discussion. And so we came up with this nomination process. So with regards to the chairperson nomination, each board member that has been provided a handout which describes the board chair position and responsibility. The committee also discussed the nomination process for a chairperson and determined that any board member who wishes to be nominated as chair should submit a letter of interest, a statement of qualifications, and the FFP form 806. And then the submissions for chair should be sent via email to the clerk of the board, Julia Tour, prior to December the 31st. And as in regards to the 2018 committee appointments, the committee also discussed the process for the 2018 slate of MTS committees and outside agency appointments. Any board member who wishes to be nominated to any of the committees listed in Attachment C should contact the clerk of the board prior to December 31st. Board members may also write their name next to the committees that they are interested in and give it to the board clerk today. So the next steps are that the committee will convene another meeting before January 18th board meeting to review the board member submissions for chairpersons as well as the various 2018 committees. An item to select the chairperson and approve the appointed list of 2018 committees will be brought to the board on January the 18th. And that's my report.
Thank you very much, Mayor. And I like the process that you set up.
Any questions? Okay, so that's a process. So get your applications in. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, we're getting short on time here. Manny, do you think you can deliver your report?
I don't know if Deputy Director Tim Curran's been formally introduced to the board, but he's sitting here with me. Tim's been with us for the last 8 months, and he came from us to us from the sheriff's office. He was an assistant sheriff working directly for Sheriff Gore, so we're very fortunate to have him as part of our team. So. And I'm here to present the 2017 semi-annual security report. Before I get started, I just want to say to Chairman Mathis, it's been a pleasure and an honor working with you and under your leadership. You've been such a big part of the San Diego landscape for so long, and to actually have the opportunity to work with you has certainly been an honor. So I just want to share that.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay. I'd like to start off just as a reminder of how our department's made up of. We started the year with 34 code compliance inspectors and about 170 contract security officers. We are contracted for 194. The contract security company had a little bit of difficulty maintaining that number, but they did provide people at overtime at their cost. Oh, sorry. There we go. Sorry about that. I'm trying to go so quickly here. Our co-compliance inspectors are public officers and have the power of arrest, whereas our contract security officers are private citizens. They're in uniform, they're deterrent, they can make citizens' arrests just as any other citizen can. And also part of our team, we have our joint agency task force. As you recall, they started in February 2015, originally funded through a grant that we received, and we've received portions of that grant over the next couple of years. The team has changed in its makeup now. It's a six-person team made up of a SDPD sergeant, two SDPD officers, one sheriff deputy, and then we have a co-compliance inspector and a security officer. In March of 2017, we began the hiring process to add 30 co-compliance inspectors, which is part of our new staffing plan. As of October 26, so we had 63 total. In July of 2017, we began reducing the number of contracted security officers. Our goal is to get down to 144. We're actually currently below that number, but they do still provide staffing when they're short at overtime at their cost. In July 2nd of 2017, we had about half the people we're trying to hire actually out of training, and we're able to implement our BEAT system in the evening hours. After we got everyone else through training, we began implementing the full BEAT system in August 27th. And this is what is our sector and BEAT map looks currently. We've divided the system into four sectors. Each sector has either three to four BEATs. Each BEAT is three to five stations, with the exception in the north sector, we have one large BEAT. The red dots indicate where we have a fixed post position. So each of those BEATs are staffed with we call a train team, which is made up of a co-compliance inspector and a security officer. And their job is to work that BEAT just like a police officer would be working a community BEAT. As far as Part 1 crimes, we use ARGIS data, which is the database for all municipal law enforcement agencies in our region, and we also have MTS data. And you'll notice the numbers are different. All crimes that are Part 1 crimes are reported by law enforcement. We go into ARGIS and we obtain all the crimes that are MTS related. The reason why the number is smaller on the MTS data, because sometimes a crime will occur and we're not notified of that crime. So the ones that are MTS response data is the ones we actually responded to. And a good example would be if you look at motor vehicle theft, there was 45 in the first half of 2017, where we only reported 12. And the reason is when someone has their car stolen, they call the police right away and they want to make sure someone's looking for the car, that it's in the system. If you'll notice on our Part 1 crimes, each category crime has gone down compared to the 2016. There was one reported rape in 2017, and that's highlighted. And the reason why that's highlighted, because that's such a sensitive and serious type of case, and they all are, but that makes people nervous. And in this particular case, it was determined to be unfounded by San Diego PD, and they're their investigated agency on that. We broke down the Part 1 crimes in 2017 that MTS responded to. Of the 54, four of them occurred on board, and those are the more serious crimes reported to the FBI. And MTS was involved in 10 of those arrests. We've then broke down the Part 1 crimes by sector, and at first glance you would see that it looks like the South sector has a much bigger problem than the rest of the sectors. And in reality, if you look at the robbery and aggravated assaults, the numbers are pretty much the same in each sector. Where what spikes the number in the South sector is property crimes and primarily auto thefts. And auto thefts has traditionally been a problem in the south part of our county due to proximity to the border. And as a former captain of Southern Division, I can tell you it was a huge, huge, and still is a huge problem, but still a problem. On Part 2 crimes, we only report what MTS responds to, because it would be impossible for us to determine what Part 2 crimes. These are the mostly misdemeanor-type crimes. If law enforcement is involved, to determine whether or not it's transit-related. But there was 253 of those. The big number is vandalism. That's the only crime that we've reported an increase. In actuality, I don't really believe there's an increase in vandalism. I just think that we're getting much better at reporting it. And most of that is on board, and that can be from something simple as someone writing the name on a seat to something, you know, more serious, where someone's tagging the side of a trolley. And we made 81 arrests in 2017. Our calls for service for the bus side have gone down significantly. The way we receive a call of a bus incident is that a bus driver will notify their bus dispatch, and bus dispatch will get a hold of security. The majority of those calls for service are disturbance calls, and as you can see, that's the biggest number, and then followed by vandalism and assaults. As far as Part 1 crimes that MTS responded to, only four of those occurred on board of the more serious cases. So riding on our bus, where you may have somebody that might be boisterous and loud, it's still extremely safe. We made three arrests in the first half of 2017. Our response to Part 2 crimes, we reported 60. 22 of those were on board, and 13 arrests were made as a result of those. MTS responded to 88 total assaults. That's both on the bus and trolley side, and that's both Part 1, which are the more serious crimes, and Part 2, which are the more of the simple assaults. And we had 143 in that same time period in 2016. And of those 88 assaults, 50 of those assaults were on MTS employees. And the majority of those were on security officers who were trying to enforce an ordinance generally or try to take someone into custody, followed by bus drivers. And oftentimes an assault on a bus driver may be as throwing a liquid on them or spitting on them, and occasionally actually get physically assaulted. Our task force during the first 6 months of the year has been very active. They made over 600 arrests, but I will tell you that about 90% of those arrests are for warrant arrests. And those occur when they are doing fare checks with our co-compliance inspectors, and somebody doesn't have a fare, then if the police are present, then they'll actually check and see if they have any criminal history or a warrant. So there is a correlation between criminal activity and people who don't pay their fare. You can see also, and that's the number of citations, 2,842. We only had 2,338 of all 2016 from this team, and that's primarily from our co-compliance inspectors. Our fare inspections actually went down slightly in the first 6 months of the year, and that's because our focus became more on just getting fare inspections, but when you inspect somebody and there's a fare violation, to actually enforce that, which takes more time. And what was happening before is that we would give there was an expectation that you would need to do a certain amount of fare checks. So if someone got tied up on something and they fell behind, they would do fare inspections, come across a fare evader, and give them a warning or ask them to step off instead of enforcing the law because they're so concerned about getting the inspection. So we think this is having a much more positive effect on our fare evasion rate by actually enforcing fare evasion. And you can see we went from 9,400 fare evasion sites in the first half of 2016 to almost 15,000. And this, keep in mind, this is before numbers are before our new co-compliance inspectors came on board. Smoking is probably the thing that we get the most complaints on, and you can see there's been a big increase in the number of smoking sites as well as failure to comply. We did 21 special enforcement details, and that's how we determine our fare evasion rate. And during this first 6 months, our fare evasion rate was 2.96, which is really a tremendous rate, probably one of the lowest in the country, especially for an open system. On our SDM inspections, on the trolley, there was just over 4 million trolley riders were inspected. Of those, there was 567,000 SDMs. We had a violation rate of 0.1%. I wouldn't put too much weight on that number, because a lot, oftentimes one of our transit security officers would come across a violation and didn't actually enforce it, actually asked them to step off. So when you go to the bus side, that's a more controlled environment. We did 53,000 rider inspections. There's 23,249 SDMs that were inspected, and a 0.32 violation rate, which is a significant improvement. If you recall, about a year and a half ago when we did a pilot on the bus, it was a tremendous, tremendously large number. So we're doing much better in that area. We do a lot of quality of life in transit encampment details. We get a lot of complaints when an encampment starts developing, especially in the riverbeds on our right-of-ways. We address those on a regular basis. And during this first 6 months, we did 13 larger scale transient encampment details, which are pre-planned. And then we did another 49 mini details when we see an encampment developing. We'll get a compliance inspector and a few security officers and to go address that. We also support MTS cleanups on our right of way when there's encampments that have been abandoned, or after we kind of come to do enforcement, we provide security for that. When contract cleaners come in to remove the property. And I know I went through that very quickly, so are there any questions?
Any questions, comments, anybody? Seeing that, thank you, Manny.
Okay, great, thank you.
And as far as working with you, Manny, the pleasure is all mine.
Well, thank you, sir.
Okay, I do have a couple of, before we get wrap up the meeting, I do have two speakers under 63, so let's let them speak. Oh yeah, I, if there's no objection, I'm going to waive the reading of the report for the October 2017. In the next meeting, you'll get more up-to-date information anyway. So, if there's no objection, we'll dispense with that and consider that accepted. Okay, let's get the speakers up here. Cameron Hemini. Yeah, I'm going to have to cut you short, so
yeah,
make it
very
quick.
Very quickly. I know some of you. Hello, Chair Mathis and board members. It's nice to see Supervisor Cox here. We had a big meeting at the airport last week about issuing more permits. The board voted for that, airport permits. The issue of discussion, very quickly here, I just wanted to report to the board that at the TAC meeting a few weeks ago, we brought up FRED, which is the free ride everywhere downtown. They operate downtown. They got $5.7 million in loans to a private company, and they're operating free, but we all know there's no free lunch. So there's a complaint submitted to MTS on behalf of the San Diego Airport Taxi Association, and MTS and your wonderful staff is investigating, and there may be medallions issued to these LSVs, low-speed vehicles, just like all the other LSVs have to get medallions and have their insurance registered and their titles placed on file with MTS, because these vehicles have been seen operating with Minnesota dealer plates, which leads to the question of are they being regulated and what's their insurance. So I'd like to thank your wonderful staff and thank Chair Mathis for his great service. And I personally am maybe a much younger generation will continue carrying the torch forward, especially at the airport, I hope.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Al Davis.
Hello, sir. I am so politically ignorant that I have no idea who any of you people are. The reason I came is I had a suggestion. Years ago, I learned that the San Diego City Police Department has an operation or program. Probably everything I'll say you know about, most of you, if not all of you. It's called RSVP. Do any of you know what that means? Retired Senior Volunteer Program. So what I wanted to suggest is that you folks here, you're the ones that can do it, implement a similar program for the Metropolitan Transit System, at least at the trolley stops, the trolley stations and transit centers. You get senior citizens who are responsible, reliable, physically and mentally competent, capable, to spend some of their time as a volunteer sitting in the various trolley stations. maybe with a cell phone, and they just watch. And they report things, maybe physical plant, but maybe incidents that occur, whatever. And you people design the program and decide what's done, how it operates or doesn't operate, and so forth. Have you ever thought of doing something like that?
Well, we have an ambassador program.
What?
We have an ambassador program of people to help out.
Oh.
And they, you know, they help people in the stations. They show them how to use the fare machines, that kind of thing.
Well, I think maybe I've encountered such people occasionally. But what I was thinking is sort of undercover agents who are unofficial. They don't wear uniforms. They have no equipment. But they're just there watching.
Well, we have CCTV, you know, closed-circuit TV at our stations for that.
Oh, one thing I noticed this morning, I question whether some of those cameras are aimed in the best possible direction. Possibly they it could be
well, checked. We try to monitor that and make sure we when we look at the pictures, if they're not focused on the right thing, then we adjust them. Some of them are movable.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes, sir. I guess it's not very helpful, and you thought of it already.
Chair Mathis?
Yes.
As the one of the two members of this board on the Public Security Committee, I'd like to let Mr. Davis know that, Mr. Davis, I'll bring your suggestion to the Public Security Committee, and we'll have a discussion on it. Thank you very much for bringing it to our attention.
I have many other suggestions.
just one at a time. Thank you.
Did you have somebody like me in mind, though? Yeah. Okay. The chairman's report. What can I say? At my final meeting. It's just thanks for everything, and certainly to all of you and yours. I certainly wish you a very happy holiday, a Merry Christmas, and may next year be a joyous year for all of you. Okay, CEO.
I have nothing, just Merry Christmas to everybody.
Any board member communications? Anybody? Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, the next meeting date is January 18th, and I can't promise that I'll be here, but we are adjourned, and thank you for staying over.